creator of Live at the Table. Thank you all for coming here today and hearing the stories of women veterans and our journeys. Our stories need to be told. Our stories need to be heard. And that's what Live at the Table is all about, bringing you those stories that you probably have never even heard from women veterans. Our day today is going to be a great day because we have a fabulous guest. Her name is Vanessa Harris. She is a Army veteran, and she's here to tell us about her journey in the Army and why she's using spoken word and song to deal with her challenges. And so today, I'm so honored to have her here. And right now, I have none other than Ms. Vanessa Harris. Thank you so much, Vanessa, for being here on the show today.
Thank you guys for having me, or you rather, at the table for having me. Yes.
You're so welcome. So tell me, why is it important for you to be here at the table today?
Oh man, I think any opportunity that women, especially service women, can come and tell their perspective and tell their story, I think it's important. That opportunity should definitely be taken. A lot of times as service women, we are underestimated and overlooked. Not even acknowledged in some instances. So if someone is offering a table, a platform, whatever for us to speak, I think that it would be in our best interest, in the best interest of everyone, to listen and for us to speak. So definitely, it's super important.
And I think when I was thinking about this actual platform, you hit the nail on the head. It's important that people know who we are. We already have a struggle within our own community with veterans, women veterans, not thinking themselves as veterans. So I believe when they see other women veterans talk about their stories, maybe this is a way for them to really embrace that they wore that uniform and that their lives and their stories matter and that they're important. And so that's why it's important to have you and other people to come here at the table, because there was no table for us. So now it's for us to create the table.
Yes.
So let's get into your story. Of course, you know, I was an Air Force veteran and you chose the Army. So why did you choose the Army?
Oh my, you know what? I'm just gonna keep it real, keep 100 with you. I didn't want to go to college. I wanted to go straight from high school to the military, and my preferred branch was the Navy. Ooh. My sister was in the Navy. Although my dad served in the Army as a Army officer, I wanted to go to the Navy. I had 4 years of Navy ROTC and I was ready. But my parents were like, hey, you got this scholarship to go to a military college. So we want you to go to college. You want to go to the military. If you go here, then both of us get kind of what we want. You get military, we get you in school. So, hey, so I did. I settled for the Army at that time, but I grew to know that that was where I was destined to be. It's what I loved. That's pretty much why I chose the Army. Initially Navy bound, but college, was an avenue my parents wanted me to embark upon. I did. I was a student at, Georgia Military College and in the Army as well.
So why did you think your parents wanted you to choose the military route? I mean, we all know that veterans period choose the military for different reasons. I chose it because I saw my parents struggle putting three of my siblings through college, and I didn't want them to have to deal with that with me. And so I chose it as a way to have financial security and a means to pay for my school. So why do you think your parents were so gung-ho with you actually going as well?
Well, they weren't super gung-ho about me going to the service. They were more so wanting me to go to school. Okay. I was more so wanting to go into the military. I didn't enjoy school much when I was there. I don't know. I just didn't enjoy it at all. And I was like, hey, the best part of school to me was ROTC. So I said, hey, I think this is something that I like to do. I like the structure. I like the skills that I'm picking up. I like the camaraderie that I'm getting, you know, within, you know, this organization. And my dad did it. My sister's doing it now. They're enjoying it. They're financially taken care of. They can handle their business. They're, you know, so I'm like, hey, I think this is something that I like to do. And within the military, I felt like there were so many facets of things that I could do. I wouldn't feel like, oh, I just have to be, you know, stuck shooting something. No. I can be whatever I want. If I want to be a teacher, if I want to be a mortician, if I want to do music, if I want to play basketball, you know, if those are my skill sets, I can find that within the military. So, yeah, I was just ready. I was ready. I enjoyed ROTC in high school, and I wanted to transition into my adulthood, having the same kind of experiences and fun and freedom that it looked like the military would provide. And it proved itself to do that, yeah.
And so what type of work or what was your job in the military? And how many years did you complete?
Okay, I was a 44 Bravo, which is a welder, heavy machinery repair. I did that. I served in the military. Goodness gracious. I feel like I'm so old, right? Like I've been out for so long. But no, I served in the military for about a good 10 years. Okay. 10 years before I was medically retired out. Yes.
And tell the viewers, what does that mean? Does this hear a veteran say they were medically retired out? What does that look like, and for what reason were you medically retired out?
Okay. When you're medically, you know, a full retirement would be your time of 20 years, 21 years or so. And I was medically retired due to an injury that I sustained in Iraq. There was a mortar attack in Iraq, in the camp that I was at. It was Camp Liberty at the time. And there was a bomb, piece of shrapnel from that bomb hit me in the head, cracked my skull, and left me with some memory deficits, things that wouldn't enable me to do the job that I needed to do in the military. So when the military breaks you, they humbly retire you or help you to retire early. And so that's why I was released from the military at an early retirement. So yeah, that's pretty much what that looks like, I guess.
And so when I'm hearing you talk about the memory loss from the shrapnel and things of that nature that you sustained in Iraq, is this something like traumatic brain injury that you had that caused the memory loss, or did they categorize it like something else?
They categorized it as a TBI, traumatic brain injury. Yes, there was lots of swelling. I had a skull fracture. It was pretty intense, pretty intense situation. Yeah. I definitely can remember it. It was like, it's almost like it, I don't want to say it happened yesterday, but I can remember it vividly. It has affected my short-term memory more so than long-term. So I write lots of notes and I keep lots of memos in my phone. At the time it really, you know, I guess earlier on, it definitely affected me where they could see it. It was kind of strange when I first got injured. I didn't want it to debilitate me. I didn't want it to, you know, make it so I had to get out of the military. I wanted to stay in. I wanted to be with my battle buddies and my friends. I didn't want to get out. I kind of felt like, you know, I was in the hospital in, I believe it was Baghdad, in the green zone in Baghdad. Our general over us came and gave me, issued me a Purple Heart. And he came to my room and gave me the Purple Heart. And I was upset and I was mad. And I was like, no, you guys are trying to send me home. Y'all treat me like this because I'm a woman. I was so upset. Yeah. I didn't want it. I was like, nope, y'all not going to do me. Nope. It's just, I just got hit in the head. I'm okay. Everything is cool, but turns out it was not cool. It was not okay. It was a lot of pain, a lot of work I had to go through to get back to seeming normal. And what I did was, I don't want to say I snuck my way back where I connived my way back, but I honestly felt that I was fine and I was okay. I was in med hold for about 6 months. And after that 6 months, I requested to go back with my military family back overseas. I requested to go back. They were still there serving, and I kind of felt like a buster for not being back with them. I felt like they needed me. And I went back. I went back to Iraq, served out the rest of my tour, and I did it with difficulty. I didn't realize how the injury affected a lot of things. And at that time, it was the early, I guess, stages of OIF. Operation Iraqi Freedom, and they really didn't know too much about the you know, the outcome or the from injuries and things like that. And yeah, I would do a lot of things that I didn't intend to do, and catch myself in a lot of situations as far as being in pain, headaches, as far as forgetting things that I really didn't anticipate would be my issue. But it showed itself to be. But I didn't tear anything up while I was over there and made it back in one piece. But definitely, I think I moved hastily and going back was really didn't think it all the way through. But I did go back and serve the rest of my tour with my unit. Yeah.
And you know what? Just to hear you talk about that, isn't that who we are? Is that yeah. we want to always be with our peers, when, particularly when you leave the battlefield. Like, I was in Iraq twice and Afghanistan once. And I can only imagine what it feels like when you're so connected to your comrades and your coworkers, and you have to come back home because your tour is not over. You're like, no, I want to finish. I want to stay with my people. And it was a common thread with a lot of the people that I interview with. They say the same thing. I didn't want to come back home, and I wanted to go back. And to know that you was able to go back and you finished, even though you had some deficits, I mean, that takes a lot of fortitude. So tell us about that and what that felt like, knowing that you wasn't 100%, but you were so connected to your unit, you wanted to go back.
Now, I did. I wanted to go back. I felt as if my unit needed me. It was kind of strange. I was the only woman in my unit, in my whole unit, the only female. Mm-hmm. I felt bad. I guess it was a little bit of my own personal emotion getting in the way as well. I felt like it would be me, the only woman, who'd get hurt, you know? And I guess as women, we do that. We have to prove ourselves. Mm-hmm. We have to, you know, push through. Hey, I'm here for a reason. I'm not fragile. I can, you know, I can take a licking and keep on ticking, you know? And so I came back. Not wanting a pat on the back, but I guess I came back wanting to let them know that, yeah, I got hit, I got hurt, but it's not going to stop me. It's not going to hinder me. Now, truth be told, when I came back, I got met with a lot of opposition that I did not expect. I felt like I was coming back to help my unit, you know, to provide a service, because I was a welder. And at that time, welding was very important because they were trying to up armor vehicles and they were just rigging stuff. Like, people would come, they'd be out on missions and they'd come back and say, hey, can you fortify my tank right here with some metal here? Or, you know, just, you know, they just wanted to be protected. And we would do that. We would, you know, fortify these Humvees and all that. And I felt as if my job was important. And I came back and it seemingly a lot of the men in my unit, they was haters. They was haters when I came back. They was like, I guess they thought I was gonna come back. You know, I was injured. I had a purple heart now. So I'm thinking I'm all of that. And I'm just like, nah, like none of that. Like, tag, I'm it. Like, they got me. Like, I'm not like proud of this. It's not a badge of honor for me. You know what I'm saying? The badge of honor was like me coming back and wanted to help and be there for my unit. But I had some haters, honey, and not just some, a lot of haters, dealt with a lot of things that, I mean, I guess a lot of people don't like or want to talk about, but military is just like any other facet of life. you work a corporate job and you have your boss that's a male, that's a man that, you know, kind of likes you a little bit, but you're not showing that you're interested in him, so now you're on his hit list, you know. And so, but being the only woman, of course you get met with that. We're in Iraq, and you're the only woman in your unit, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, your supervisor, your superior, you know, he wants to, you know, talk to you a little bit, and you're like, hey, especially me, I was just totally like, I'm here to do a job. I'm not about that life. And, yeah, I got treated really bad. One, because, like I said, they thought I was going to come back with a pompous attitude, and then the other, I'm not a hoochie mama out here in these streets. I'm not trying to be desert booty, as they would call it. Yeah. I'm not trying to play that desert booty game. Yeah. And because of that, I got told a lot of things like false formation times, or was told about formation times later than it was supposed to be, or earlier than it was supposed to be. And it had me looking crazy and feeling crazy at the same time. I was realistically dealing with memory deficits and things of that nature, but I always made sure I backtracked and I had notes and things like that so I wouldn't make mistakes. But they were trying to tell me, oh, you're just confused, or you're just this, and you shouldn't have come back. You know, you should have stayed. You know, you had the chance. You know, you're more of a hindrance than a help. Mm-hmm. All of that. I had to go and request to be changed as far as my unit because it was so much opposition coming to me. I actually had to be moved to an infantry unit. Again, all men, but I was like the mother hen, man. They treated me so good. And it was crazy that a group of infantry men, that's all they do is go out and do work. Yeah. They treated me like royalty, and they treated me like a soldier right along with them. But I got met with opposition with going back. And like I said, that's the uncomfortable truth a lot of people don't like to talk about. But it was pretty tough. But I still, even more so than just wanting to go back to show them that I wanted to come back and support, it was for me as well to know that I still have a purpose, that I still can do. And I did. I did well when I worked with the infantry group. I did convoy tracking. So when they were out on convoys, I would track their trip and let everybody know what point they reached and they made their safely. If they needed anything, I would send those commands up to talk and all that. And so everything worked out great. I came back and I felt fulfilled, like I did my job. So it was a lot.
But let me tell you, I mean, hearing you just talk about how your old unit kind of treated you the way that they did, it was almost like it was a slap in the face that you are rushing your recovery to get over there back with them to be a team player. You wasn't there to not be a team player. You wanted to be a team player, and you came with injury. And for them to treat you that way, I mean, what a slap in the face.
Oh, yeah, definitely so. And like I said, I don't want to, you know, make it say, oh, it's an Army thing. It's a life thing, honey. Yeah. It happens everywhere, but it's jacked up that it happens in the military, yeah.
And I think for our viewers who think, you know, yeah, you know, we all have this team player concept and we're so gung-ho about each other. Here is a prime example of you being one of the only females in a unit. You bust your behind to get back to the unit.
Yes, I did. I did a lot of stuff.
I mean, it's almost like you were retaliated against because you wanted to come back and be part of the team. And because you got the honor of having a Purple Heart, then why should you, you know, feel and get the resentment almost from your comrades? Yeah. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, I felt it. It was so thick. I thought it would be all love when I came back, but it was thick hate. I was like, oh my.
I think it's possibly because people see the Purple Heart as being a great honor. It really is. But guess what? You just don't get a Purple Heart because you're just walking up and down the street and your health is fine. You know, any of your comrades could have been in your position, gotten hit with shrapnel, have a TBI, and have the honor of getting a Purple Heart. But my goodness, I mean, to know that you was dealing with that on a constant basis and to be transferred, it's almost like, wow, I did all this. And to know that you guys didn't even care. I mean, what was that like?
It was tough. It was rough. I made really good friends with the chaplain, really good friends with the chaplain and some foreign nationals there as well. We were actually in a beautiful area when I came back. They had moved from Camp Liberty to a camp called Camp Stryker. And it's actually in a biblical area, the home of Abraham, heir of Chaldea in the Bible. And it was amazing. Like I said, I had to find some kind of solace. You know, it says everybody, when you go to Iraq, you know, if you wasn't a Christian or you didn't have religion before, you find it while you're over there. And I definitely have always had a spiritual walk, spiritual relationship with God. But definitely while I was over there, I'm trying to tell you, I was in gospel choir. I led the gospel choir for a minute. I got with a spoken word poetry group in Iraq. We did poetry in Iraq. And I found different things to definitely help me heal emotionally. Like I said, I went away from I left the unit while I was in Iraq, went to another one that didn't know my past, didn't know my story. Mm-hmm. I had to get it done. I activated my get it done. I think I get it from my dad.
Yeah.
My dad was the ones that us struggling or not having was not an option. So whatever he needed to do to get it done, he got it done. And so I carry that same thing. If I'm experiencing an issue and a problem, I don't like to wallow in it. I don't like to stay there and just say, woe is me. It's like, hey, let's get this fixed. Let's repair this. Let's make this better. And that's all I did over there. I got met with opposition, but I said, hey, I came back over here. It's not like, you know, y'all treat me bad. So, I want to go home now. No, we're going to make the best of this. And we're going to make it better.
Man,
and, I definitely enjoyed my time, the rest of the time I had over there. I definitely enjoyed it. You know, I was serving. Yeah.
Your tenacity to get through all of that, Vanessa. I mean, to number one, you were in a unit, you were the only female, and you had to overcome those challenges. And for you to be a welder, there's not that many female welders in any branches. So for you to overcome that, and then to go to the heat of Iraq, I was there twice. I know exactly what you're talking about. I took care of soldiers that got shrapnel coming through Balad Air Base. So I understand that. And then for you to somewhat recover, come back, and then had to find another unit that would receive you and accept you. And that's what we still battle to this day as women veterans, is finding the community that's willing to accept us and to hear what we have to say and feel the value in what we're having to say. Because look at what you did. You had to leave an old thing and find something new for you to be valued and accepted.
Come on. It's true, yeah.
So let's talk about when you left Iraq, you got medically boarded, you had to, you know, deal with your TBI. So for the audience, tell them what that's like to have the short-term memory loss and all the other symptoms that you may have with a traumatic brain injury. What does that look like for you?
In the beginning stages, I feel like I'm in the hospital, like I'm talking to my psychiatrist. I might start crying. But listen.
That's okay. I'm here for you.
It was traumatic. It was very traumatic initially for me. Having an invisible injury is what I call it, and it's what it's known as. There are no scratches that you can see. You know, I got a head full of locks. You can't see my scar, you know, and people don't understand. The first thing I started to see things within myself that I was not as quick with. I went back to school when I came back from Iraq, and oh my word, school was the hardest thing ever. I mean, I never was a straight A student, but it was because I could get by with just, you know, doing the minimal and still making A's and B's, you know? But when I came back, I tried to make good grades. And I'm trying to tell you, I literally D's, F's, fucking out. I could not concentrate. I couldn't remember things. And it just, you feel broken and you feel like you can't breathe. You know, when you can't do things that used to come naturally, you can't do them anymore. And I was discovering this. You know, nobody told me, hey, you have memory problems. I discovered these things, you know. There was no, medical doctor that said, hey, you hit this side of your head. This is what you're going to suffer with. No, I had to stumble upon all the things that were not the same. And the memory deficit was one. Concentration, the memory, the concentration. I do have this nagging thing that I deal with as far as anxiety attacks. I'm still learning what my triggers are for those. Those are the worst. I don't know if you ever dealt with an anxiety attack. It's kind of like some people's called panic attacks.
Yeah.
And they just come out of nowhere and your body's reacting and it's a mess. I mean, physically your body's reacting.
Yeah.
So those are things that I dealt with. Coming to the realization that I dealt with these things was something that I had to deal with, and it was very difficult. And I slowly but surely got better in accepting the flaws within myself.
Mm.
But what took the longest and I'm still working on is other people's reaction to my disability.
Hmm.
Because I have the invisible disability. People can't say, oh, she has an amputated leg, I'm going to have some type of sympathy, empathy, compassion for her. But, you know, I may, because I have this invisible injury, nobody can see it. I'm going to try every day my hardest to be normal, to do things right, to do them a certain way. But if I get off of sequence, let's say if I have an event like a house fire that I just got, you know, done with going through recently, a house fire, things that change my structure, it's like I have to start all over with a new structure and re-remember and make sure I'm on time. And these are things that if, when I'm on a routine, it works out great. But when I'm off of a routine, it's like, who is this person? Yeah. And so dealing with people, dealing with me, still to this day is very hard. Yeah. Because I don't want to have to stop and give my story. Well, this is what I went through. This is why I'm doing this, or this is why this is happening. They don't understand it, and they don't. And I don't want to have to give that story. You know, I don't want you to pat me on the back. I just want to be understood and loved, and not beat up on because I made a mistake. Because you don't see what's going on in his brain.
Yeah.
Me trying to hold it all together. You just see Vanessa, you know, with her fresh locks, you know, and her bright smile. And, you know, she remembers all these poems. So she couldn't possibly have a memory issue, yeah. You know. So it's so difficult functioning in a world where people can't see your disability. So yeah.
And I think that's such a major point, because for me, who cope with post-traumatic stress after being in war 3 times, I've had that same kind of challenge is when I say to people, you know, I do suffer from post-traumatic stress, an invisible scar, you know, say, well, how is that possible? You're still able to be an executive. You're still able to function as an owner of a nonprofit. You're still able to do all these great things that they see me do. And they don't. And then, like you said, I don't want to have to tell my story of why I'm saying to you, I have post-traumatic stress. So if certain things are a little off today, or my anxiety is a little up today, it's because of that. It makes it very challenging to be like, do I want to walk out here today and have someone misconstrue who I am, or misinterpret why I did something, or don't have the compassion for me because I'm going through something? Yes. And to have to sit there and talk about it all the time, I totally understand it. I just wish the community, I wish your viewers, when you hear someone say, regardless if they're male or female, if they have a traumatic brain injury, that you have compassion for them. And don't make them tell their story. Just say, okay, what can I do to help? That's it. We don't want to tell our stories all the time, because it compassion what we've been through. So I think if the community understood that, and for you to bring that awareness right now here with the HBCU Smart TV Nation, I think that's a way where we can hopefully include that conversation and make some changes in how we respond to people like you and others that have those invisible scars. So I think that's a huge point. It happens every single day. And women veterans say that all the time. I'm tired of telling my story. I don't want to have to tell my story. And I say to them, tell it, but also know it's going to help somebody, save somebody, motivate somebody, or encourage somebody. And so if you stay along that path, maybe hopefully I'm having to tell your story won't be so bad. So that's a good segue into how you're coping with it, right? Because you are a songstress. You are a killer when it comes to the mic and spoken word. So let's talk about how you have coped with your TBI, because to the average person, they'll be like, well, how can she remember all that if she has a TBI? So tell us about that.
Definitely. I always wrote. I'm sorry. Can you see me?
No, you're good.
Okay, great. I had a phone call. gosh. Actually, I always was a writer. Always sang a little bit here and a little bit there. But when I had my head injury, I was in the hospital and I couldn't remember hardly anything. Like at that, you know, those first couple of weeks and first couple of months, I couldn't remember my mom's like middle name, like little small details and things like that, how to type, things like that. I couldn't remember. My brain was not, you know, connecting the pieces. And it was a lot of things that I had struggles with remembering, but it was amazing that every piece of poetry, every poem that I had written up to that point, I remembered every single poem. And it was amazing because I was just going through in my mind, just sitting in that hospital bed. I believe at that time I was in Germany, and I was in Landstuhl, a hospital in Landstuhl, and I was just trying to escape my memory, like, to see what's going on with my head. And that's my whole survival mode kicking in, like, what is it can I do? What can I do? You know, I'm just trying to put it all together. And I was just, like, almost in tears, like, because I couldn't remember certain things, and it was horrible. But sitting in that bed, I thought about my poetry, and I started off with the first line of a poem, and it kept going and kept going and kept going. And I finished that piece, and in my mind, I went to the next poem, and I could remember each and every one. And at that moment, it was like a personal kiss from God letting me know that what I gave you, no one can take away. And so with that, and I'm sorry, I get emotional when I tell
that story. No, that's okay. That's okay.
Because at that moment, it was just like a personal kiss from God. It was hope just like sprung up in me, mm-hmm. and let me know that I was going to be okay, and that this thing that he gave me, mm-hmm. it wasn't just for me. It was for the world. Everybody needs to hear it. And this was my gift, and this was my calling. Mm. So it made me confident in the gift that he gave me. It let me know that a lot of people go through life and don't know what it is they're supposed to do, what their calling and their gift is. But I'm grateful that from this tragedy or from this situation, unfortunate event, God still got the glory, you know what I'm saying? And it was to my benefit as well. So I'm totally grateful. Poetry for me has been therapy. Mm-hmm. It's been everything to me. And it's crazy that through all of this, every poem that I write, I remember each and every one. Mm. There's not a poem that I've written that I don't remember. And I'm so grateful that I think God does things the way that he does them so that we can know. We can't think it's anything that has to do with us, so that we can know that it was him that did it. So yeah, poetry has been my therapy. It has helped me, not only me, but it's helped others. And I feel like that's the way we are to live, not just of service to ourselves, but to others.
I think that is so perfect, because I think sometimes, you know, you have to go through a tragedy in order to get to where you need to be. And some people are like, you know, why did I have to suffer in order to find out what my purpose was? And, you know, we don't have an answer to that. At the end of the day, we just want people to be divinely driven to do whatever they're called to do. And I think that's beautiful how, you know, you felt it was a kiss from God that he gave you this poetry and gave you this talent to be able to use as a way to recover, as your therapy. And I've seen pieces of yours, and I was just like, oh my God, that's deep. And I knew a little bit of your history, but to know that you framed it the way that you did, a kiss from God, I mean, I think that's incredible. And yeah. To know that you were able to recall your poetry, all the short-term memory loss.
Yeah.
If you didn't know that was your purpose, that should have been a clue right then and there that
it
you
was.
Had to walk in your purpose by it doing poetry. So thank you so much for sharing that. And so I know we want to get into hearing a piece, but before we get into hearing a piece, I want to do the rapid fire questions that everyone hates because they never know what these questions are. And this is an opportunity for the viewers to really feel your heart, your passion, by not being scripted. We're not scripted here at Live at the Table. We're having a good girlfriend conversation. Ooh. And that's what it's all about. But this at least has you on your toes. You're able to kind of give us a little bit more insight.
I feel like I'm in OT. Therapy. Yeah, let's do it.
You're not in therapy, honey. No. Okay, so the first thing is you've talked about spoken word and how important it is to you. Your first phrase that I want you to complete is words can
heal.
And heal in what way?
Words can heal. I mean, just the same way they can tear people down, they can heal, they can make you better. Hearing somebody's story, hearing somebody's testimony, the Bible says that we are redeemed by the testimonies of others. So words have the power to create. God breathed himself into us, his breath. So the same power that he has, we have. So words can break, can break strongholds, can break chains, can uplift, can give you the motivation to keep doing what you're doing, and it can give you the motivation to stop doing what you're doing. So yeah, words are powerful. Yeah.
And for people that are just now tuning in, you also sing, and you sing beautifully. So what does songs do for you?
Oh, man. Music, man, singing is like breathing. It happens, I'll catch a cold or something like that and lose my voice, and I'm trying to tell you, it feels like I can't breathe. Music is everything to me. Oh my goodness. It's same thing. It's healing. It's restoration. It's therapy. I mean, it's heaven coming down personally to me when I can open my mouth and those tones and things can come out. I mean, it's a whole science behind tones and everything too. So I'm trying to tell you, music is just therapy all together. Vocal instruments, everything. It's just therapy.
Your passion to inspire comes from?
My passion to inspire comes from within. It comes from without. It comes from, when I say within, it comes from that burning desire, something inside of me that naturally, innately needs to do that. And then it comes from, my little motivating factor, my son. He sees, he's a part of me. So he knows certain things that should be done and that I should be doing. And if I'm not doing them, he knows. He can check me on those things. And so he's my motivating factor. He's definitely my push, my little, his name is William. And I call him my willpower.
I love it. William Willpower. I love it.
Yes, definitely. For real.
Life without spoken word would be?
Confusion. It would be confusion. I would be full of thoughts, full of emotions, and no outlet for them. I would probably implode. I'd probably be a depressed wreck. Real talk. My life without spoken word. Yeah. It's definitely been it's been a release. It's my exhale. It's been all of those things for me. So yeah. And not to mention that my life would be a certain way. Someone else's life would be altered as well. Because people are being transformed by my testimonies, and if I'm not there to do that, then it's like a ripple effect, you know. So many people are not hearing those things, are not hearing that confirmation, are not hearing the whole, oh, me too, like I'm not the only one, she is too, you know, and that those are things that help us all. So a lot of things are affected if my spoken word is not going forth. Yeah.
So I think that's the segue into you giving us one of your pieces, if you are willing to share. I hope you
are more than willing.
One of your pieces, and I want the viewers to know that, I mean, her pieces come from the heart. This is not something that's scripted or something that she had to prepare for, like she said about, you know, God kissing her with this gift in the hospital as she's recovering and being able to recall her poems. I mean, this is who she is to the core. So at this moment, at this time, I would love for you to bless us with one of your pieces.
Excellent. No doubt. I don't really name my pieces, but we'll just start off. I never prided myself in being the wittiest or the prettiest, but this right here, baby, I work hard for this. Boy scars for this. Serve my country proudly. Purple Heart, war scars for this. Who we are in this room are warriors. Won't be none after, wasn't none before us. See, because we are cut from a different cloth. Keep your cotton. See, we are the fabric of each other's lives. I need you to survive, and I refuse to let this dream die. My son will never look at me and say, Mommy didn't try, and I believe. I believe that the ancestors are looking down from the skies, and to them, it's no surprise that that it's a sign of the time how my words create rhymes. No longer miscellaneous chimes, more in the line of divine, because I've died and I've been resurrected. See, I sat back, been criticized and corrected. Now I pray. I pray that my words will reach our hearts and minds and be well respected. Don't neglect this. Better yet, stop. Look. Listen. Constantly premonitions coming at you by one, by two, by three, not knowing he who finds she finds a good thing. Luscious, sweet, cool, complete, intelligent, whole, a privilege to encounter. Who is this? You truthfully ask this overpowering Nubian sister who wears not a mask, defies the worldly norm, can make any man jump back into the womb and be reborn if she so desires. Jesus Christ, Prince of Peace, strong in battle, he lights her fire. Yo, who is she? Well, she is me. African beauty, Nubian cutie, Nefertari, Nep duty, Tahuti, most elevated deepness, lady poet. Act like you know. See, if 32 to the 1/5 power, then simplify it equals 2, then that's true. And if I say I'm going to take break and mold your mind with this poetry, then that's what I'm going to do. You tell me that I'm dope, and I tell you that I know. See, in order to be, then you must know. And if you don't, then maybe you should go slow and easy. As if a cool, refreshing breeze from heaven came and caressed your soul with the intent to make you bold about who's and who you are. See, I am his seed, and his seed is blessed, though stressed at times. The devil tries his best at times to rob me of my sanity, my intellect, and yes, even my spirituality. But I'm fighting an already won war. My goal is immortality. He is my hopes and dreams, my joy supreme, my savior, Lord, and king. He's my everything. Supplies me with the ability to do what I do. So no, Lord, none of me, all of you. Thank you.
Girl, you're deep. And that, even though you said it, that was dope. That was dope.
Thank you.
Oh my God. I mean, I felt that. I mean, it's like, you're so correct. It can transform lives. Just in that minute that you just gifted me with, I feel like, oh wow, I need to do more.
Yeah.
I can do more.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. No doubt in my mind that's what I'm supposed to be doing in life. There's no doubt. Yeah.
And so what are you hoping to do with this craft? Are you looking to do a book and put a road show? What are you looking to do with Spoken Word and Songs?
I'm hoping to just inspire. If that results in, I definitely have a book that I'm working on, small little chapbook that I'm working on currently right now. I am my boyfriend at the moment, and I would say not just the moment, hopefully forever. We are working on a collaborative project right now. Music, I'm rapping a little bit, I'm spitting poetry a little bit, definitely singing, and we're working on a project as well. But my hope is that I'll be able to allow this gift, like the Bible says, allow your gifts to make room for you. And this is the gift that God gave me. So I want to be able to take this gift all over the world, be able to take care of my family, and to bless people with it. That's my goal. That's my aspiration. I do some shows here locally in Augusta. Since, of course, COVID has happened, it's definitely halted a little bit of the doing shows and all of that. But still, like I said, I'm doing a lot of collaborative projects with other people. People are sending me tracks. Hey, can I get your background vocals on here? Or hey, can you do a poem for this album? I've done so many of those since COVID happened. That's one thing. COVID's not stopping people with their dreams. People still have dreams. People are still accomplishing their goals. And I definitely don't want it to halt my mission to get this word out, to get this spoken word out and to the people that need it.
And so I read in your bio that you're also doing some work with kids. And so what is that about?
Now, like I said, since COVID has happened, they're kind of funny about different people coming to the schools. This and the third, I worked and volunteered with a poetry nonprofit called Poetry Matters Project. And it is here in Augusta, Georgia. The amazing lady who started, her name is Lucinda Clark. And she does an amazing job with basically creating venues and avenues to inspire people to fall in love with words. So basically what I did with the program was she has so many other entities to what she does. But what I did, was I went into local schools. Most of the time we went in schools that were failing, and we would create poetry workshops so that the kids could come in, they could work on their grammar, they could work on all of the whole subject verb agreement, everything, and really come and also release. It was therapy for them, you know, and they learned something in the process. And after we left each school, we made sure that we created a book for the children so that they will all be published, you know, they will be authors, you know, by the time we were done working with them. And so that's what we did. We went into several schools here in Augusta, Georgia, and worked with children, and basically, in a nutshell, helping them fall in love with words. And that's what we did.
That's beautiful. So not only are you being an inspiration to adults, but you're also being an inspiration to the children as well. And I think, you know, that's the community as a whole. So you're influencing the community. And I think that's absolutely beautiful. So as we are rounding off our hour here of talking and telling the world about your journey, what message would you give to women veterans for 2021?
Man, I would say dig in. I talked a lot about that whole get it done switch. If you don't have one, try to establish that switch, that mental switch, that emotional switch. Whatever the issue and whatever the problem is, there is a solution. And you can figure it out. You can figure it out. Dig deep within yourself. Don't sit back and wait. Don't think that you have to wait for somebody or something. Everything that you need is within you. Dig in. If that means making sure that you find somebody inspirational to listen to on YouTube, if you need to find some books to read, if you need to do some guided meditations in the morning, find out what it is that you need to be able to handle the burdens that life is going to bring you. I would say don't wallow in anything. Don't wallow in any mess. Time's out for that. You're here for a reason. Dig in. That's what I would say.
Oh, that's beautiful, considering what we've been going through in 2020 and COVID. And I know there are a lot of people struggling right now, Vanessa, with mental health issues, with depression, anxiety, PTSD, because they haven't been able to see their family members, or my goodness, if they've experienced a death because of COVID. And so what message would you give to those people who are really on that cusp right now of feeling hopeless and feeling like, you know, I just want to check out right now? What message would you give to them?
Listen, I mean, it ties into the first thing I said. The song says, sometimes you have to encourage yourself. You've got to encourage yourself. You've got to. You have to make the time to do that. I know I started with the guided meditation earlier this year, and it has transformed my life. We have to realize that we are physical beings, but we are also spiritual beings, and we can't so much take the time to, you know, make sure all this is nice. We put lotion and oil on this, but our spirit and our soul just ashy, struggling. It's just thirsty. It's just ashy. It's crusty. It's just struggling. We've got to find time, make time, because there's never going to be enough time. You have to make it. Make time to feed your spirit in whatever way that may be. If it's prayer, if it's finding a group of people that you can just talk to, if it's the meditation, I'm telling you, meditation works for me. And if it's learning how to breathe properly, which is another amazing practice, learning how to breathe properly. Self-care will take care of a lot of things outwardly. So if you take care of yourself, you can take care of other things and other people. So I would say self-care. You've got to do it. You've got to do it. Make the time. If it's 5 minutes a day, start somewhere.
And I think it's important too to give people permission to not be okay. We're all walking around here, but this facade that we're fine.
You're right.
I'm here to tell everybody that it's okay to not be okay, and give yourself a minute and give yourself permission to just say, I'm not okay today. That doesn't mean that you want to take your life or anything like that. You're just saying, I'm not okay today. But like you said, you got to go out here and encourage yourself to, yes, so you can get back on the horse and be okay. And I think a lot of people just struggle with that. So I love those suggestions that you just gave so people can do self-care so that they could be okay. That's, yes, wonderful. That is absolutely amazing. So before we end here, where can people find you, Vanessa?
All right.
Oh, my goodness. I know you're doing a lot there in Augusta, but somebody in Texas, in Florida, in Massachusetts, somebody want to get in contact with you. And how can they do that?
Listen, I do everything. I do weddings. I do motivation speaking for singles ministries, for marriage ministries, for any kind of youth ministries. If you just, you and your girls trying to have a little sit and sip, whatever, I do those too, all of that. But if you can reach me on Facebook under Vanessa Harris, and you can inbox me, all of that, anytime. You can reach out to me on Instagram, under Most Elevated. Also on YouTube, you can reach me I have a YouTube page, Most Elevated Deepness. So you can see some of my work on that YouTube page. And you can, like I said, you can like, share, subscribe, all of those things, as they say. I hear that so much of my son watching YouTube. Oh gosh, it gets on my nerves. But you can do that on YouTube for me. Definitely. That's how you reach me. Like I said, if you want to reach me for events, I do poetry writing. If you have an event that you want someone to write a poem for, weddings, I write poems. I don't just, hey, I have to say them. I can write it and send it to you. I do all of those services. So definitely reach out to me on Vanessa Harris on Facebook, Most Elevated on Instagram, Most Elevated Deepness on YouTube.
Awesome. That is so beautiful. And so my words to you would be, and this came from Ms. Denitra Hampton, who was our actual guest last Friday, last Wednesday. She said, God qualifies those he calls. And I really believe, just in this interview today, that God has definitely called you and he's qualified you to do the things that he's having you do. So be blessed. I'm so honored that you were here today with me, and you chose to be here with me today.
And I
just feel so blessed from the things that you just said and the spoken word and that beautiful voice of yours. And I know you're going to be an inspiration, an encouragement, and a motivation to millions out here. I'm claiming that to you right now in 2021. And again, he has qualified you, girl, to do what you are called to do. So stay in your purpose, stay driven, and just know great things are going to come your way. So thank you so much for being on the show today. Thank you all for watching us. And if you want to be a guest here on my show, please, you can email me at cjackson@amvets.org. And we will be here every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on HBCU Smart TV for what? Live at the Table. Thank you all so much. Enjoy the rest of your evening, and God bless.